Okay, we're now recording the conference. First, I want to say welcome to everybody who's attending, and thanks for logging in. And as I said before, this recorded webinar will be available for folks to review and listen to in the future on our website. The very first thing I want to do is, if you have the ability, please mute your phone until you want to speak. And you're welcome to ask questions at any time. So you can ask questions. You can also use the chat feature, which should be on the lower left-hand side of your screen. And I'll try to monitor that as best I can. But that's a pretty good way to ask a question, and hopefully myself or Jim will be able to get to that. So today I'm very fortunate to have Jim Nygaard, who is the superintendent of schools in Valdez City School District. So Jim, how long have you been the superintendent there in Valdez now?
I'm just reaching up on my second year, Lon.
Okay. And previous to that, you were in Cordova for how many years?
I was in beautiful downtown Cordova for 5 years. And then I'm a retiree out of Montana. Actually, prior to Cordova, I was in Southeast Island for 3 years. So a total of 10 years of Alaska experience and 25 years in Montana.
All right. So we've got a very experienced superintendent joining us today. And thanks for doing that, Jim. We really appreciate it.
Yep.
So the presentation that we're going to go through today is going to talk about the superintendent communicating and building a relationship. But maybe before I get into the presentation here, I want to make sure I recognize everybody from the various different districts. So we have Bernie Grieve, who is also a superintendent and on the Chatham School District. So thanks for attending, Bernie. We appreciate that. Then it looks like we have Harvey Hoffman from Cuspuck. Is that right, Harvey?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. And we've got Katie Cox Wilson. And Katie, did you say you were from Bristol Bay?
That's correct.
Okay. We have Wendy Rainey from Cordova.
Hello.
All right. And then it looks like we're getting a couple other people that are logging on. Nell Huffman. So, Nell, remind me what district you're with.
Iditarod,
that's right. I knew that. I just wanted to be sure. Okay, let's see here. Iditarod. Just taking a little. Thanks, and welcome, Nell. And who do we have? I guess that's it for now. So, well, with that, we'll get going. So, like I said, we're going to be talking about the superintendent, your communications as a board member with the superintendent, and really building a relationship with your superintendent is going to be critically important. So let's get into it. So what this is all about is trying to team up for success. You know, the board and the superintendent fulfill very specific roles in the governing relationship of running a school district. And so in the beginning, the board is the one that governs and the superintendent administers. And it really takes a team effort between the board and the superintendent. And there's very specific roles and responsibilities between those two. And we're not going to get too far into that today. That's a whole nother presentation. But this is really aimed at giving you some insight into beginning to develop a relationship and learning how to communicate with your superintendent. And, of course, it says there, united we stand, divided we fall. So what do you think about that, Jim?
Well, you know, it's especially critical in today's world. It seems like with everything changing as rapidly as it does from the federal and state level, one thing that really hasn't changed is the increased need for communication and working together. And I really have always been blessed with a good board, but they've always expected accurate, consistent communications, and you know the no surprises approach. And otherwise, there's detriments that'll kind of chip away at you. But I like your United We Stand comment because, like I say, everybody's busy, but you got to know what's going on if you're going to be successful.
All right. So the reality of this relationship is that it's going to be complex, just as most relationships are with, you know, with your partner, with your family, those kinds of things, and they are going to take work. And those relationships are going to vary from district to district. I bet, you know, we'll ask Jim about this in a minute, but every district is different, every superintendent is different, and every board is different. And you're going to find, even after you've been on the board a little while, if you get one new board member on your board is different. And so that relationship that you cultivate with your superintendent is critically important to help provide some stability to the board and help help the superintendent understand where he or she stands with the board and being able to communicate effectively. So issues that come up about the relationship between the district and between the board and the superintendent, you know, what's the length of the relationship been between the board and the superintendent? A brand new superintendent coming into a district with veteran school board members is one thing. A brand new superintendent coming into a board that has several brand new board members, that's gonna take quite a bit of work and may need some extra outside help. Issues, of course, play a huge piece. And knowing what your role is as a governance piece of the pie, the working with the governance issues, the policy issues, those kinds of things, and knowing that the superintendent is there to implement policy and advise you on generating policy that is appropriate. And then, of course, you have personalities that you have to deal with. And there's no doubt that at times people certainly don't get along. But you're an elected public official. It's your job to try and make this relationship work. It's the job of the superintendent to help make this work because the primary focus is on making sure our students receive a good education, that student achievement is improved, and that students are successful. And then finally, another big piece of this communication and relationship piece is really understanding local traditions and customs. And each community has their own, certainly each sector of the population has different cultural needs and ways that the district may need to work to be relevant to its students and to its community. So those are pieces that you will kind of have to work on as you develop this relationship. Jim, why don't you talk a little bit about disagreements and how that tends to also be an important part of working through a relationship.
You got the easy part, Lon. You know what? With the disagreements, you know, you kind of hit on the fact that sometimes a single board member can change the chemistry of the board. It's critical that everybody stays on the same page with their conversations and dialogue for the betterment of the district and especially the kids. But you know, when I was considering our visit this afternoon, the things that I thought about was in Alaska, especially this time of the year where there seems to be a lot of openings for superintendents and you don't get anything accomplished without some degree of longevity. And when a superintendent comes on board, whether it's Valdez or elsewhere, you don't have a lot of time to visit with a lot of board members. You have to put things together and you have to start heading forward again and maintaining that charge. And without good communications to the board chair especially, you're going to walk yourself into a corner. So it's critical to maintain the communication, make sure there's some kind of board direction so that especially in the middle of the summertime when a new superintendent comes on board, you think what you're doing is right, and if you cross roads, you cross a tradition that was taboo, you're starting out with a black eye. So some of that stuff you have to figure out as quickly as possible and figure out what the differences are, possibly on your own board, possibly with your admin team. Maybe there's not a healthy relationship with the city and the school district, but you really need to get yourself out in front as early as possible. And again, with a superintendent coming on board in the middle of the summer, there's not a lot of direction at that time. So the communication at that point really needs to be reversal, coming from the board to the superintendent. And as the superintendent establishes a comfort level, then that communication needs to start going the other direction. But as far as getting up and running, especially with a new superintendent, it's important for that board to communicate some direction and some of the goals of the board. Otherwise, you're gonna go down the wrong path for sure, and you're gonna probably be responsible for some of those uncompromising differences and some of those personality conflicts that might surface between you and a board member, especially.
Right. And Jim had mentioned before kind of this little motto that we use a lot, which is the idea of no surprises. And so one of the really important things that every board member should bear in mind and that the superintendents bear in mind as well is nobody likes surprises. So when we're dealing with issues, something comes up in the district, somebody talks to you about an issue, it's really incumbent upon you to speak to a superintendent as soon as possible and tell him, I'm hearing this and this is happening and I want to make you aware of it. We just don't want surprises, because when you get to the board table and you spring surprises on people, it has a major negative impact on your relationship and your ability to communicate effectively with the rest of your board, but certainly with your superintendent. So really important to do that. And then the other piece is, the last item there, talking about inadequate superintendent performance. Well, we hate to see that. Oftentimes we may see that because unknowingly the board may not have provided good direction. And again, that's a whole nother topic for another work session. But we talk about trying to have goals, trying to give people, especially superintendents, a framework that the expectations of the board are going to be met by the superintendent, and that you agree on those, and that's critically important. So this whole idea of building this relationship and having good communication, even when you may not necessarily like that other person, it's still your responsibility as an elected member of the public. So are there any questions on that piece before we move on? Okay, and if you have a question about anything and you're a little shy, go ahead. You can use that chat box down in the corner. So we'll move to the next slide. Maybe. There we go. So let's talk about roles and responsibilities real briefly. So the board, here's what the board is responsible for. The board assists and supports the superintendent with advice and counsel, okay? And the superintendent does the same with the board. We'll see that. The board considers and approves policy. That's one of your major functions. And policy being, these are the rules by which we're going to govern and operate the district, okay? The board adopts a budget. So the board has to understand and know about the budget. The superintendent usually puts the budget together, but the board is the one that has the fiduciary responsibility for oversight of the budget and approval of the budget. So you are the one who will have the responsibility as a board to allocate resources to ensure that students are educated. The board delegates to the superintendent all executive functions. In other words, the board delegates power to the superintendent to implement what the board needs to have done. So, you know, the superintendent really is the chief executive officer of the district and chief operating officer, so to speak. They're the ones that are going to implement what the board is putting together. The board needs to allow the superintendent to manage the employees. So there's only one employee, basically, of the board, and that is the superintendent. And then the board keeps the superintendent informed that no surprises, okay? And that's the board as a whole, and that's also each and every individual board member. The board refers complaints to the superintendent, and this is where it can get pretty thorny sometimes. You know, you're going to get stopped in the grocery store, at the post office, somebody sends you an email, and they have a complaint about what's happening in the district. You know, they didn't like what happened at school with their student or various different things. And you are not there as a board member to solve their problem. You are there to help facilitate where they need to go to help get an answer to solve the problem. And if that problem needs to eventually come to the board and face some resolution by the board, then that goes through the superintendent and eventually makes it onto the agenda of the meeting. So you are there to help be a communicator of the community to the rest of the board, and particularly to the superintendent. And then the board holds the superintendent accountable. So you are going to be involved in a process by which you evaluate the superintendent. You see what kind of progress is being made in terms of the goals for the district. Is the strategic plan being implemented? Are students succeeding? Are we seeing improvement with student achievement? Do the schools have a positive climate? Are people connecting with students? All those kinds of things. And those are things that the superintendent and his or her staff are tasked with doing. Any questions on roles for the board? Okay, Jim, I'm going to let... Yeah, go ahead.
You know, the last two bullets there are really critical. I'm referring complaints to the superintendent. I really, really encourage my board members, you know, if you hear something, you know, thank the patron. You know, I'm glad you brought that to my attention. I'll make sure Jim is aware of it. And then I have absolutely no problem with board members sending me a note or stopping by and making me aware of that. And sometimes board members feel a little bit gun-shy. They don't want to be a nuisance or whatever. Absolutely not. I need to hear that stuff. And better yet, the board members need to tell the patron exactly that. Jim needs to hear this stuff. And thanks for bringing it to our attention, you know, rather than airing it out in the post office or the grocery store. And then help me hold it accountable, you know. And that last item there, holding the superintendent accountable and making it public. If the morale of the staff isn't to the board's comfort, or if student performance isn't to where the board is comfortable with it, by holding the superintendent accountable for that and making a public statement, you know, as a wrap-up to the annual evaluation, it also allows me that foothold to go forward and gives me the ammunition to be a little bit more aggressive in improving staff morale or going after improved student scores. So all that stuff is critical. There's absolutely no problem with holding me accountable on all that stuff. I mean, superintendents need to be held accountable, and the patrons need to know that communication is coming in from the board members to the superintendent. So I think those last two bullets there are especially critical ones. Thanks.
This is Katie from Bristol Bay.
Why don't you take the next slide, Jim?
We had a question from Bristol Bay.
Yeah, this is Katie. I just had a question in regards to personnel. If you're hearing complaints about a teacher in the community, is that something that still needs to go to the superintendent, or is that something that goes to chain of command? back to the principal, to have a person go to the principal and have them deal with it?
Yeah, great question, Katie, and one that comes up a lot. The idea of what is the process for people if they have a complaint or they have a concern, and it really does start, with the supervisor that's closest to that person if it's a personnel issue that you're having some difficulty with. So if you've got a parent that's having a problem with a teacher or somebody at a school, say at a middle school, then yeah, that the counsel would be for you as a board member to say, okay, have you spoken to the principal about this? And make sure that they know how to get, you can help facilitate having them get in touch with the principal. You know, here's the phone number, here's an email, even you can, I've had some board members say, well, would it be okay if I, helped take that person to the middle school or whatever and help them get a meeting with the principal? And certainly you can do that. You just can't step into the issue. Okay. Once you get them there, then you need to be back off. If they've already gone to the principal and they're still not, they don't feel like they're getting satisfaction, then they can go to the superintendent. Either way, I would always, as a former board member, if I got somebody that was saying I'm having some problems, and I need to go speak to somebody, who do I talk to? I would tell them, go talk to the principal. And I would also let the superintendent know, look, I had a person that had a complaint or a concern. I told them to go talk to the principal. I just want you to know that's what I've done. Again, it's that idea of no surprises. What do you say, Jim?
I agree with you, Lon, and I kind of read into the question more that maybe if the board member was having a problem with a staff member, rather than the board member going directly to the principal, most board policies have an AR that lists the chain of command, and the board typically will stay out of mischief if they bring their concerns directly to the superintendent. But Lon, as you referenced, if they're counseling a parent, absolutely go to the building principal at that time. But I encourage all my board members, if you have concerns, you go through my office. One of my biggest jobs is to be able to run interference for the building principal so they can get their job done. And the board's responsibility is to communicate directly through me. So I've kind of two answers on that one question. But like I say, if it's a parent, absolutely they go directly to the principal. If it's a board member that's kind of disgruntled with some performance of a classroom teacher, the board member is better off to come to my office first.
Very good point, and that also frequently happens. So, and it's one of those things that you're going to find, it's important for board members to be aware of what's happening. It's important for board members to understand what's going on. And if you see something as a board member that you're not comfortable with, go speak with the superintendent. Just realize that it's not your role to get involved in personnel issues. And that once you have that conversation with the superintendent, then you need to back out of the way, because at some point, depending on whatever it could be, you may be sitting as a board of adjudication for a grievance hearing or something like that. So, okay, why don't you go ahead and take this next slide, Jim?
Excellent, thank you. Roles and responsibilities of the superintendent, and of course you've got to be loyal to your board, or you're not going to be on the payroll very long. And part of that is being able to understand the direction that the board is trying to establish for the district, and making sure that communication is clear so that you're not saying one thing and then the board is expecting you to do another. But, the loyalty and comfort level with the board is absolutely essential. Assist the board with counsel and advice. You know, a lot of times this comes through a work session. AAFB provides an awful lot of good workshops as far as developing that dialogue. And as the year progresses, there's a fatigue factor that kind of starts nipping away at everybody. And it's really important to understand that as a superintendent and as a board member, that if there's things going on, it's probably getting more and more important to get that conversation public so that everybody's aware, first of all, that you're dealing with it, and second of all, that you're available to listen to their concerns too. Keeping the board fully informed, I've always been a strong advocate of weekly updates. I send out one religiously on Thursdays to each of my board members. And then I always schedule a minimum of two different phone calls to my board chair, one a couple days before the board meeting, and then one early in the week when I'm starting to develop the board agenda. Here's currently what's going on. You know, especially this time of year, we're hiring teachers, we're transferring, we're tracking the legislature, what's Senate Bill 89 going to do and what's 88 going to do. So keeping my board informed, but especially my board chair informed, because when the gavel hits on a Monday night, my job is to make those guys look good. And the better I can make them look good, the better those meetings are going to go off and the more successful we're going to be. So it comes back to communication is just huge. Instructional improvements, you know, everything from in Valdez, we're largely committee-driven, trying to get as much patron input as possible and student input and staff input. And there's a lot of technology out there that can support these kids and what they're trying to do. So it's important to keep ahead of where we are with instructional components. Recommending purchases and services, again, especially at this time of year when the, you know, our targeted date to have everything spent out and invoices received by June 30th, it's critical to have all that current and to keep the board informed. You know, if you have some big purchases coming in, laptops, security cameras, maybe a new vehicle or something, keeping an eye on the finish line, of course. Manages the finances of the district. Lon had mentioned earlier how it's a superintendent's job to develop the budget for the next year, and ultimately that comes out of the business manager's office. But this time of the year, I probably have five different budgets floating around out there right now, five different contingencies, because if the TERS and FERS impacts the district, my board chair is going to come in and say, so, Jim, how are you going to deal with this? And I need to have that ready to go. So when we talk about managing the finances of the district, one thing is to monitor it, you know, from month to month to month, and everything is electronic anymore, so it's not that difficult. But the part of the old crystal ball isn't very accurate anymore out to about maybe a year. It used to be you could do a three-year teacher contract. You know, not in today's world. I'm not a real strong advocate of that anymore because it's just so unpredictable. But ultimately, like I say, you have to have multiple contingency budgets ready to go. And then, of course, tracking the gains in student achievement is huge. We watch where AMP is taking us or not. I've always encouraged localized testing, MAP testing, for example, where we can track that individual student to the T by the minute. And if something's not clicking right, if we can change the performance of the teacher versus the performance of the kid and the strengths, that all comes back ultimately to the superintendent. And sometimes it makes for long days, but when it comes to preparing a kid for, you know, 40, 50 years of a successful adult life, sometimes you have to put in a little bit of that evening overtime stuff to figure out what's working best. So ultimately, that's kind of where I come in at with my roles and my responsibilities to the board.
Okay, great. Thanks, Jim. Let's see. We've got a question here from Katie. So she's asking, when you have your meeting with the board chair prior to the board meeting, is it the chair's responsibility to disseminate the information to the rest of the board? It often feels like there are conversations going on between the superintendent and the chair, but the rest of the board isn't included. And this contradicts the no surprises theory. That's a good question, Katie. There is a unique relationship that takes place between the board chair and the superintendent. but there should never be an instance where the board chair is withholding information that the rest of the board needs to know. The things that, you know, maybe the board chair and the superintendent are going to talk about would be, you know, okay, as we form the agenda, where's this going to go on the agenda, what's coming up, some things that are happening. Oftentimes there might be something developing a little bit in the district that the superintendent will give a heads up to the board chair and just say, I want you to know that I'm kind of seeing some dark clouds on the horizon. Don't get panicked about it. This is something we're working on. I will let you know as something comes up. So it should always be a case where there's open communication and nothing is withheld from the rest of the board. Does that sound right to you, Jim?
You bet. And the reason that I have added time with the board chair is once the gavel hits on a Monday night's board meeting, it's his meeting. He's the one that's steering the boat at that point. And if questions come in from different board members or from community members, maybe it's with staffing. You know, why haven't you talked about this or this or this? The board chair simply needs to know that that's on the docket for the next meeting or possibly the month down the road. Or if there's a facilities issue, and why isn't that facilities issue on the agenda? I want the board chair to be able to respond to the patron, say, you know, that schedule coming up, we're working on our capital improvements list, you'll see that early May. I want him to be able to do that comfortably. And a lot of that information, although it's all board information, the entire board, it's, you know, they could come in and visit at the same time that the board chair is there, but ultimately it's part of the board's chair to be ultimately responsible to respond to those questions too. And I also have kind of an unwritten law. If my board chair stumbles for a minute, then I got the meeting. And then I grab it and run so that he can kind of regroup and figure out where the questions were coming in at. But I just want to make sure that he's prepared and that he's looking good not only to his board but to the patrons out there. The information that I'm sharing with him is just courtesy update information, and ultimately that stuff eventually crosses the desk of each board member anyway. It's typically just a heads up, and I'm not sure of the right way of saying it, but I just want to make sure that he's as well-versed on all those items, even with the legislature coming in. I'll sit down and spend some time with him that each board member would certainly benefit from it, but at that time it's probably not as critical as it is to make sure the board chair is present and consistently updated with that too.
Right, and the board chair's role in facilitating the meeting, you know, is really critically important. And the board chair's role working with the superintendent to put the agenda together for the upcoming meeting is the other piece that's very important. And I served as board chair for many years on the Sitka School Board. And there would be, sometimes there would be requests for various different things to be on the agenda. And as you build the agenda, I would often take a look at, you know, how many items do we have on the agenda and what's the priority of items that need to be on the agenda. And were there some things that we might either be able to defer to another meeting so we're not going to the wee hours of the morning, and or if it's a committee report, for instance, and what comes before the board chair and the superintendent looks like, this really needs some more work, then the board chair has the prerogative to send that back to committee and say, no, there's some things that we'd like to get cleaned up on this before it does come before the full board. Because we want to make sure that the time that the board spends together working on issues is as effective as it possibly can be. But the other piece is that the board chair is really there to serve the board and to make sure everybody has the opportunity to participate. So it gets to be a complicated role. It's a critically important role, and that relationship between the between the superintendent and the board chair is a critically important one. But that's a great question, Katie. Thanks for asking it. So we'll move on to the next slide. So a little bit about some questions for you to consider and maybe give us some answers. So here's the first question. Who is responsible for the supervision of employees at a school site? And you can just, if you want, you can just answer via the chat. You know, who is responsible for employees at a school site? Is it going to be the superintendent or is it going to be the board? The principal, right. Yeah. So it's not the board's role. The board's role is not not dealing with that. So yeah, the principal and then ultimately the superintendent who has the final authority. Who appoints, compensates, and otherwise controls all school employees? What did we just go through there? What do you guys think? Who might that be? Is it going to be the board or the superintendent? Right. Yep, it's going to be the superintendent. And then finally, who approves the employment contract of the administrators, the teachers, and the certified, non-certified personnel? So who approves the contract? This might be a bit of a trick question for you. Do you think that's the superintendent or is it the board? So Wendy's saying it's the school board after superintendent recommendations. And that's correct. And this is where lines start to get a little fuzzy for some folks. And I'm sure Jim has some stories about this, but the board has the ultimate authority for approval, okay, because they have the ultimate authority for approving the expenditure of funds, but the superintendent has the responsibility for hiring and recommending. So what happens, and I see this happen time and again, is that a superintendent may recommend hiring somebody because they have all the right qualifications, they've met everything that needs to happen, they might be the best candidate for the position, but one or two board members don't like that person. That doesn't matter unless there is something found that would exclude that person from meeting, you know, that candidate for a position, exclude them from meeting the requirements of being able to be hired. The board's approval simply says that, yes, they've met the qualifications and that we're basically trusting the superintendent to do the right thing in hiring. Would you agree, Jim?
I would. I think you said that quite well, Lon. And Wendy is also correct. You know, when I am making recommendations for hire, from each building, I ask the principal, give me your list of tenured teachers that you're recommending. That list comes to me. I put that together in a lump recommendation to the board, and then they get the final approval. So it's a couple-stage difference. But when you talk about a new teacher hire or possibly somebody coming up for tenure, it can get a little bit more sensitive at that point. And that's where it's really important to be involved in the hiring process from a superintendent's perspective, as well as in my world, when a principal does an evaluation on a teacher, I read every single one of those so that when the board is concerned about a teacher coming back for a 10-year contract, the responsibility falls on my shoulders, not the principal of the building. That responsibility comes off me. So like you say, it can get a little bit fuzzy, but you need to be engaged, especially with the hiring of staff. It doesn't need to be at the third year when you're coming up for a 10-year contract. It could be for your very first year, maybe a teacher's coming in from another district with some history, but ultimately, you need, as a superintendent, you need to be really engaged and make sure you've done a thorough background check. And when you make that recommendation, you need to be comfortable holding your ground, too.
Oop, I'm sorry, I think I had my mute button on. So I was going to talk about communicating with the board, with the superintendent as a board member, and how important this is. So defining that relationship, the roles and responsibilities between the superintendent and the board is critically important. And we have at AASB a number of resources that we can help folks with. We do a lot of workshops, and we train on this. When we do board workshops with individual boards, we often try to spend some time talking about roles and responsibilities. Maintaining the relationship requires that open, direct, two-way communication. So, you know, be ready to have those conversations. Sometimes those conversations aren't that are not that easy, but I have found that most of the time, nearly all of the superintendents who tend to be pretty successful have a very open door policy and are willing to talk to folks, even if they don't always agree with each other. That's okay. And then the board and the superintendent need to determine, you know, what are going to be the best ways to communicate. Jim said that, you know, he sends out a weekly update every Thursday or Friday to keep the board informed. Some boards want that. Other boards say, well, I don't really need that. You need to, you know, send something to us every so often. What kind of a report do you want from the superintendent? What kind of written report do you want from the superintendent each month in the meeting? Those kinds of things. How much and about what issues do you want to know about? You know, when do you want to know this information? How soon? The one thing that I have seen on several boards is sometimes you may have a board member who gets very passionate about a particular issue and then begins making lots of requests to the administration for information. And just to make sure everybody understands, all requests for information, for the most part, within reason, any major requests for information that look like they're going to take a considerable amount of time need to go through the board chair to the superintendent. And ultimately, the board has the power to say, no, that's an unreasonable request for information. You're abusing that privilege. We are going to limit you what you can do. And this has happened on several boards. Would you agree, Jim?
Yeah, and you know, I got cut off there for some reason, so it's kind of ironic that the communicating with the superintendent slide comes up and I lose my communication skills. But you're right. You're right there. And I have a great board chair, and one of the things that he's really gun-shy of is he's just as open with me as I am with him. Jim, if I get to where I'm micromanaging, you need to tell me, because I'm new to the board. I'm new to the chair position. I just need to know. And I think that's critical to have that relationship where you can say, you know, you're probably crossing into where you don't need to go right now, and here's the reasons why. So I think that establishing that role for the board is really critical.
Okay. Any questions on that piece, on communicating with your superintendent? And it takes time. It does take time to evolve and figure out what the best ways are. And everybody has different ways of communicating. You know, and especially today, I mean, some people like email and other people don't. Some people will text, other people won't. You know, it's quite a wide variety. Okay, we're going to move on and try to get through this. I'll probably have to pick up the pace a little bit. We're at 12:50 now, and I don't want to go much past 1 o'clock if we can help it. So just problem solving for a minute. So let's say you're confronted by a constituent in your local supermarket, and they're talking about, you know, a problem with their child being assigned to a teacher. And we kind of went through this a little bit. So how would you conduct yourself as a board member, and what would you do following the conversation? And we did go over this. So just to reiterate a little bit, we identified that there's a chain of command, you know, and that your role as a board member is to help facilitate that communication from that parent to whoever needs to be notified within the district, and certainly at some point possibly the superintendent. Does anybody have a question about that? again, you're not, as a board member, you're not going to solve their problems in solving the issue. You're not going to get involved in that piece. You're going to help solve the problem by getting them in touch with the right people. Okay, so meaningful communication, when we talk about that, we're talking about, you know, something that, you know, is absolutely necessary. And I think Norm Wooten put this slide together, and he says, you know, it's what gas is to a car. It's what air is to a ball. And without either one, the car won't run or the ball won't bounce. And that participation and partnership between the two is critically important to make this thing work. Any words of wisdom on that, Jim, before we go on?
Yeah, just a couple of comments. In an earlier slide, we talked about what board members prefer as far as communication from the superintendent's office. And when I read into this slide, you know, meaningful communication, we get so much stuff electronically anymore. It almost has taught us not to read. So I like my board conditioned. When they get an update from me, holy cow, I need to take a break and read this. And I try to limit it to 2 or 3 minutes, and that's all I ask of them, because if I start sending them 20 or 30 emails a day, you know, forget it. They're not going to read anything. So I like to keep it meaningful, keep it accurate, and all I ask for them is 2 or 3 minutes, read through it, you got questions, call me back. So that's it.
Okay. Oops, let's see. I thought I skipped one there. So building relationships and attitudes. You know, it's important to come into this thing with the right attitude. You know, assume as a new board member that you're moving forward in good faith, that you're both on the same, you know, you're both headed in the same direction. And do not, you know, you do not want to question your sincerity or your sanity. You both need to care about that relationship, like we said before. And when differences crop up, be prepared to try to get them resolved. You know, it's really important to be a good listener, to be able to try and step back and understand another person's perspective. And, you know, this doesn't happen overnight. This can take some time. And you're in a new position that you do have to step back at times and say, you know, I might be very passionate about this issue, but I need to make sure that I'm considering, you know, all sides here. I have to make the best decision for all the kids. And then be open to hearing and be open to being influenced and be prepared to possibly change. Jim, in your experience, how much have you seen that happen over the time? You know, people actually learning about something and going, oh, well, that's not what I thought it was, and I've got to change my tune.
You know, especially with new board members coming in, and they're going to, you know, set the educational world on fire, and then once they kind of get their feet underneath them and realize how complex some of those things are, I really appreciate it when a new board member comes in after a month or so and say, Jim, I'm really overwhelmed. There's a ton of stuff going on that I need a little tutorial on, and I'm ready to learn. So that's pretty cool. I think that's a great way to go.
Okay, and then the next piece is you know, your behaviors when you're communicating. And I think this sometimes is harder to work on, but sometimes you need to do that if you feel like your communication has not been all that effective. But one, really practice on listening to understand. And as a board member, you're going to have to do that with everybody. You're going to have to do that with your constituency. You're going to have to do that with the superintendent. You're going to have to do that with the staff. You know, just be prepared to learn to be a good listener. And then you need to speak to be understood. And I have found many times in the past that I assume people know what I'm talking about or, you know, kind of where I'm going with something that I'm saying, only to find out that it's been completely misconstrued. So think about the words you're using and the tone and all those kinds of things. That idea of communicating takes some work. And then this idea of really starting a dialogue from a common point of reference where you have some common understanding and then can begin, if you have a difference of opinion between the two, where can you go from there? And kind of get into it slowly. You know, one of the, and it happens, you're going to have an issue that will come up, and you're going to get pretty passionate, and you might get pretty heated about it. But you usually, we usually don't say the best things or communicate in the best way when we're in the heat of the moment. What do you think? Would you agree with that, Jim?
I like that third bullet, Lon. I've never seen it in print like that, but I appreciate the way it's listed there. I think that's a great reference point right there.
It takes a little while to practice some patience and just know that, you know, usually there is time. There's always time to talk, and there's time to kind of cool down and reflect and then move forward in a sane manner. Jim, why don't you talk about maybe these three basic categories of influence and what it means to you?
Well, you know, to model by example, that's huge right there. But I like my administrative group. I like them to set an example for everybody. And if somebody's not been getting along with somebody else, two board members, a principal, and a teacher, whatever, it's nice to correct that and then go to their turf, you know, in their classroom instead of your office. If you're having a problem with a parent, it's great to get on their turf. You know, me, you know, in a basketball game, my favorite spot was always going to a ball game and kind of positioning myself next to the door or the ticket stand, whatever, so that I can greet people and not have any resistance there. I mean, it's not always the neatest place to come into a superintendent's office or a principal's office, but if you can meet them on their turf and model some appropriate behaviors and really extend yourself and meet them in the middle, I think that's pretty cool, and I think that opens the doors to a lot of conversations down the road. Caring relations, I sit in on a lot of IEP meetings. I get into a lot of classrooms. The best time of my day is when I can go out on bus duty or maybe spend some time in the lunchroom and let other people know that I really care for those kids. And I think from a board member's perspective, you know, excuse me, a school board member is actually a whole lot busier than people think they are. And when they're engaged in board meetings and preparing for the board meeting, I think other people are going to see that, and they're going to feel a compassion when those board members vote on sensitive areas. And when a board member has to vote knowing that their neighbor across the street isn't going to agree with them, I think if that neighbor realizes how much work and time and thought has gone into that decision, that relationship is going to grow stronger and stronger too. And the same thing for mentoring by instruction. From my perspective, I have a lot of young people. Seems like Alaska has become a very transient state. A lot of people are coming and going, and oftentimes I need to spend some time with a young principal and let them know how I make decisions and why, make sure they understand that I'm tracking the budget, I'm tracking the evaluations, and set an example for them without scaring them off. So I like to make those opportunities available, and then maybe bring in two or three young people, young administrators at a time, so that they have a support group as they leave my office too. So I think all those things are huge, so that when they get out there and they can develop their own leadership style and their own confidence, that pretty soon that becomes pretty evident in their performance every day. So anything else on that one for you, Lon?
No, that's great. That's great. And to follow that up, when we talk about kind of three character traits that we look for, you know, one of the top ones is going to be integrity, that you have integrity, that you bring that to the table and you bring that to the relationship, and then the maturity piece. It's interesting to watch board members grow after their time on the board, and to watch that maturity grow as you become a more experienced board member. But you need to give yourself some time as a new board member to understand your role and to develop your relationship. and that maturity will come, and your ability to have the patience and understanding that I need to listen, and I need to make sure I consider these things in a deliberative way. And then this idea of abundance mentality, you know, defined as there's plenty out there for everybody, and there really is. All issues are not nearly as cut and dried as we all like to think. There's decisions that we make that affect a lot of people for a lot of different reasons, and there usually is plenty out there to help us make decisions, and this also affects our relationships. So as a new board member then, I'm sorry, I didn't keep up with the slide there. Getting started, in this relationship, you're going to find yourself fairly unfamiliar with some of the topics that come up. So you're going to need to spend some time kind of getting up to speed, and the superintendent and their staff can often help you do that. So don't be afraid to ask for help. Don't be afraid to ask other board members for help. And sometimes, despite your best efforts, the issues that come up are going to be difficult for you to deal with. The thing is that you do have to make decisions. And once you're at the board table, you can't abdicate your role unless you have a clear conflict of interest in a particular issue, and you still have to make a vote. The idea is to be as prepared as you can be before you go to the meeting. During the meeting, there's also avenues where you can help yourself, and you can ask for clarification from the chair. You can ask for additional information, those kinds of things, so that when you do make that final decision and you cast your vote, you're doing the best that you possibly can, but it's important that you come to the table as well prepared as possible. And then one of the last things we were going to talk about, and I'll just go over it real briefly because we're just a little past 1 o'clock and I'd want to wrap this up, is that you are also going to be involved in looking at the superintendent's contract. You're going to be involved eventually in the evaluation process of the superintendent. And as a new board member, sometimes that can be pretty difficult because you just don't have much time behind you and experience to understand exactly what you should be doing. The superintendent can help you with that, and other board members, especially the board chair, could help you with that. We at ASB can also help answer particular questions about, well, how should I be thinking about this, or I don't understand the evaluation tool. What's going on. So there's resources out there for you to understand. But then you also should be familiar with the contract that the superintendent is serving under, and what are the pieces of the contract that keep him or her employed. Jim, would you say that's pretty important for board members to understand?
It absolutely is. And it's really critical for the relationship from the superintendent to the board that you're kind of vesting your support with the superintendent when you get involved in that contract discussion. So I really look forward to the evaluation and the contract time each year to get to know each of the board members on a heightened level. Yeah.
All right. Well, that really concludes our webinar today. Do we have? I'll entertain a couple of questions if anybody has any. Otherwise, we'll wrap it up. I mean, this is just kind of touching the tip of the iceberg, and it's something that we're always working on. So, well, I want to thank everybody for calling in today and signing up and registering, participating. I especially want to thank you, Jim. Thanks for being on here with me. Your experience is invaluable, and it's great for, I hope, these new board members to hear from an experienced superintendent.
All right, Lana, thanks for the invite. I enjoyed it also.
Okay. Well, thanks, everybody, and have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Lana.
Thank you.